Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to episode 63 of Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons. This is Janae Libby. As always, like to give a special shout out to Teej FM for sponsoring this podcast. Teej FM is a community collaborative podcast network just started by WTJU. More information can be found at teej.fm. We're also sponsored by listeners like you at Patreon. Interested in sponsoring this podcast? You can do it for as little as a dollar a month and get a shout out. Check out patreon.com/audaciouspod. Interested in more shout outs and prizes and different rewards from me? Then ask me for a press kit. I'd be glad to send you one. Let's get this episode on the road, shall we? Welcome to Audacious, episode 63. How you doing, guys? Welcome. Welcome back to Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons, or welcome for the first time. This is Janae Libby. I am a writer and podcaster, and I meet with you every other week to connect, to talk with rather than about food folks online. I talk with all the people doing the work of food in our area, the people who labor in our kitchens, field stores, and boardrooms, people who are audacious about what they do. I sometimes compare it to This American Life, except we discuss food all the time, every time, including everyone in the conversation, bringing all of us to the table, asking the deeper questions, interviewing the folks that may not get a chance always to tell their stories. You can find me at iTunes or at audacious.co because .com is for sale. Today's interview is with Susan Weiner of Orange Dot Baking Company. There's quite a story behind that name, Orange Dot. Can't wait to share it with you. It was a great conversation. She makes gluten-free major muffins. I am a new convert to at least major muffins, maybe to not all gluten-free bread, but Susan's major muffins are excellent, and I highly recommend them, and we will get to that conversation very soon. But I want to check in with you guys. How are you doing? Are you breathing? Are you taking a moment to take a breath here and there, in through the nose, out through the mouth? How are you hanging? Are you doing all right? I just saw Marc Maron in concert a couple weeks ago, and he's a comedian and a podcaster and my hero. More on that later. He did a whole bit about how his phone was giving him PTSD. Like, he's scared to look at his phone in the morning, and when he does, he's like, ah, and throws it across the room. Have you done that? Did you do that this morning? I've done it a couple times. I actually have started keeping it in a different room so I don't look at it so much because it is giving me PTSD. And I am remembering to breathe, and I hope you are too. Boy, there's a lot going on, right? A lot going on in our world, a lot going on in my world. The Book Fest is coming. I know I've been talking about it here for a month or two. The Virginia Festival of the Book. The Virginia Foundation for the Humanities called me a few weeks ago to talk about the Book Fest. And I got on my soapbox and talked at length about why food writing is important, why the Book Fest is important. And that article got sent out to everybody. I hope it increases attendance at the food writing events at the Book Fest. It all starts March 22nd through the 26th. And here at Audacious, starting March 16th, I will attempt what I have never attempted before. Every day for 5 days, I will post a podcast. I have been scrambling, running around. That's part of the reason why I was in Chapel Hill. I was gathering interviews. I'm headed to DC tomorrow to gather another interview, headed to Richmond next week for a fifth one, and I will attempt to post one podcast about a food writer who will be attending the festival every day from the 16th to the 20th. Please wish me luck because I've never done this before. I anticipate that I will be very tired on the 20th, I will be moderating a panel with Sherry Castle and Ronnie Lundy on the 22nd at 4 o'clock at Barnes & Noble. I hope you will join us. We will be discussing Southern desserts. I know these ladies. I consider them both close friends. So it will be a rollicking good time. I won't be nervous because I'm so eager to see both of them again. And they will be my first two podcasts that I will post on the 16th and 17th, respectively. So please join me for that. I'm still trying to raise money for my best friend, Scotty Nichols, who is suffering from colorectal cancer. The campaign is going very well. It has slowed down just a bit. March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. We are at $2,300. I would love to get us up to $5,000 in the month of March. If you're not comfortable donating online, you can email me, Janae, or contact at audacious.co. That, again, that email is contact at audacious.co. And I can tell you how you can send me an offline donation. If you can't donate, I understand that there's a lot of expense out there. Not everybody can afford to donate. I would love for you to share the information. I've got a link on the website. Would love for you to at least share it once. Facebook ads and Facebook posts do not get to a lot of people. I think the average is 3% of your friends, 3% of the people that you know on Facebook actually see your posts. So a share would be awesome. Please help me out with that because he really needs some help. Every time he has to visit the doctor, there's a copay for anywhere from $20 to $50. So that freaking adds up, right? So please help if you can. Other news, I just started a 16-week small business course with the Community Investment Collaborative. And I want to give them a shout out because Orange Dot Baking Company is a graduate of this program, as is Arley Cakes. You will hear that podcast with Arley Arrington in a few weeks, probably the end of March. Najib of Flora Cheese is also a graduate. He is a past podcast guest. I was accepted into the program. We had our first class Tuesday night, and frankly, I'm scared to death. We have to pitch in front of 30 people, and I had somebody say, but you're on the radio. This should be natural for you. Yeah, I'm sitting here in my study talking to myself into a big fat microphone by myself. I don't have 30 eyes on me. So standing up in front of 30 people pitching my business is going to be a major career milestone for me, and I hope I get through it. And the last thing on my mind, as you hear my landline ringing there in the background, sorry about that little bit of ambient noise, I got to get this out there because Scotty's been kind of sick, so usually I dump on my best friend, but he hasn't been available this week because he's at the doctor, so I'm going to dump on all you guys. I met my hero 2 weeks ago. Have you ever done that? Have you ever met somebody famous that you really admired? It never goes well, does it? It doesn't. I went into this thing knowing that it would be awkward and it would be horrible, and yet I was driven to do it. Mark Maron is a huge hero of mine because 3 years ago when I was depressed and looking for a way out of that depression, one line in his book spoke to me. And I want to paraphrase it here. He basically said that he self-sabotages himself at every turn to keep his life complicated. And that line to me was like a thunderbolt. It sank into my heart. I identified with it. I connected with it. And probably within a couple of weeks, I had the idea for a podcast. Initially, I thought it would just bring more people to my writing. It has become its own thing, which I'm very grateful for. I'm not sure I would have done it if I had not read that line in his book and had not been such a fan of What the Fuck, his podcast, whatthefuckpod.com, or is it WTFpod.com. A lot of you know him, a lot of you don't, because he is a podcaster and a comedian. If you don't follow comedy, you might not know his comedy. I had a chance to meet him a few weeks ago. I had bought, I've lucked out and got front row tickets to his show in Durham last August. They weren't that expensive, thankfully. So, you know, since last August, I've been thinking about this. I knew I was going to be that person and be obnoxious and meet him and thank him in person. And I did it. And it was great and awful. It was great because during the show, we had a moment of connection, which got my hopes up. And I know, you know, you're on the stage, you're looking at folks, and you have this thing in your head, oh, he's looking at me. We're going to be best friends from now on because he looked at me. No, he did a joke, and I provided him with a callback. Now, if you know comedy, you know what a callback is. It's a reference to an earlier joke, and it was a gesture. I won't go into it because unless you're a comedy nerd, you won't get it. But I basically did a gesture that was a callback to an earlier joke. He pointed at me and laughed and said, oh, I might have to add that in. And I fucking freaked out. I made my hero laugh. Okay. So from then on, I'm thinking, we are definitely best friends. We're definitely going to hang out. We're going to sit at a table in a comedy bar and share war stories, yada, yada, yada. Right. So after the show, I've got my little gifts. I've got my thank you book that I want to give to him. It's my favorite writer, Tobias Wolff. Going to give him a book, going to give him a Cuban cigar because he likes cigars. He runs up to me. Do I know you? Have we met? Do I know you? I think we've met somewhere. And my response, because I wanted it to be true in my head, we had been friends for years. So my response to that was, yes, we know each other. Oh, Jesus Christ, why did I say that? And he's like, where? Do I know you? And I went, from Twitter? Because you've tweeted me a couple of times. And his whole demeanor changed. He went, oh, you're a fan. And he got the fan face. The famous person, I've just done my set for 2 hours. Here's a fan that wants a photo. And it was like, womp, womp. And it was kind of comical and kind of funny. And that's how I thought it would pan out. But the guy got my hopes up. I thought he knew me or something. You know, in my head, I wanted it to be true. So I just had to tell you guys that. I'm sorry to be dumping all. Maybe that's happened to you. Maybe you're sitting there in your car or on the treadmill and you've met your hero. You've met somebody famous and it has gone horribly awkward and horribly bad. And I know they're just people. But when they've helped you in your life and they don't know you, somehow you feel like you know them. It was cool. I've made peace with it. And hell, I gave him a callback for his routine, for his bit. And I will take that to my grave. Let's get to the interview, shall we? I do want to mention that this episode is sponsored by Teej FM. I am so grateful to be a part of that collaborative podcast network. I just met with Lewis yesterday. We will be doing many, many roundtables at their studios. Look for that in the coming months. Also sponsored by listeners like you. Check out patreon.com/audaciouspod if you are interested, or ask me for a press kit if you would like a little bit more exposure for your small business. And it doesn't necessarily have to be food. My very first sponsor was In a Flash Laser Engraving. Today's interview is with Susan Wiener of Orange Dot Baking Company and a founder of The Kitchen Network. Listen for that story. That's another great new business in town. Check out rentalkitchennetwork.com. We recorded at the Community Investment Collaborative, where I just had my first class on Tuesday. And I cannot wait for you to hear the interview. So let's get to it, shall we? Without further ado, here is Susan Wiener. Check it out. See you on the flip side. Yeah, I want to thank you because I have gotten to the point, we talked off tape, I've gotten to the point where I can book my next guest based solely on recommendations, where in the beginning I was interviewing all my friends in the food world.
I have some great recommendations.
Right. And Betty Hodge of the Small Business Development Center recommended you.
I love Betty. She's a wonderful resource.
Yeah. How did you meet her? How do you know Betty?
Well, you know, there's a great small business community here in town. The Community Investment Collaborative, the CIC,
yes.
The Small Business Development Center. Virginia Tech is actually very active in the food innovation business, and they're incredibly supportive. They've been really helpful in helping me get the right equipment in my home and doing the testing, nutritional testing on my bread. And
right,
so
right.
There are actually an incredible number of resources in our community for small businesses. And so I think maybe Keir recommended Betty and...
Right.
And
we're actually meeting in the CIC conference room.
Yes.
Right now.
I went through the CIC program and I loved it. It was like, I called it small business therapy. We'd all get together each week and discuss our problems, what our challenges were, and they would give great information and steps to proceed and knowledge.
I'm so excited because I was just accepted to the program and I start in late February, and I need some therapy.
Congratulations.
This is great. I mean, we're sitting in the conference room. There's all these beautiful pictures. There's from Seville Coffee, the owner, Najib, is on the wall. He's been on my podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what a wonderful community we live in.
Well, it's amazing because my husband sort of poked fun at me when I signed up for the CIC because I have an MBA from Wharton and I did small business consulting to put myself through graduate school. And he's like, why are you doing a class designed to start a small business? And I'm like, because I've never started one from the ground up.
Right.
And there's all that nuts and bolts that's really, that was glossed over in the businesses that I was helping. They already had all that done. And,
yeah.
And so it's been great.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Let's talk about Orange Dot Baking Company.
Sure.
What made you decide, I want to start a company, I need to take a class, this is something that I want and need to do right now?
Well, I started Orange Dot Baking Company as a way of giving back to the community. I was inspired by the Orange Dot Report, written by Ridge Schuyler, which talks about poverty in our community here in Charlottesville, and also by Greystone Bakeries, which is in Yonkers, New York, which has an open hiring policy and it works to alleviate poverty in their community. They provide all the brownies for the Ben & Jerry's ice cream.
Oh!
And so it's a... it's really my, I have been very fortunate. You know, I was able to get a great education through abundant financial aid and get a great job. And, you know, I've had a great life. And I thought, you know, how can I give back to my community? And I'm a business person. And while it's wonderful that we have high-tech jobs, we also need low-tech jobs, you know.
Yeah.
We have an international rescue committee here in town, and they're always looking for jobs for their new immigrants. And
yes.
We have people who are formerly incarcerated looking for employment. And, you know, so I see this, I have what I call a quadruple bottom line, which is social, environmental, financial. And I also, my son is celiac, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this is a market I know. There's a dearth of good bread out there in the gluten-free market.
Yeah.
And so I saw it as an opportunity to sort of wrap all my passions together.
Wow, it's like a triple threat. It's your own business, but you're also helping your son, but you also have this built-in mission to help the community too. I love that.
That's my goal. I mean, it's all very small potatoes right now, but I have a big dream.
Yeah.
I have a big dream. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the things that you've done to align Orange Dot with that mission of community?
Well, I have tried to reach out to primarily I'm doing it through employment mm-hmm. currently, mm-hmm. and I'm just a small entity.
Sure.
You know, so right now I feel like I'm really benefiting more from the community than I am giving to the community at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, as I said, you know, all these community resources that are out there, and you know, family and friends, and you know, I'm just incredibly grateful. But I see enormous potential for my business. There are over 1 million people within 6 hours of Charlottesville who are gluten-free or gluten intolerant. And my goal is to capture 20% of that market and then to build a Orange Dot Baking Company outside every major city in the United States.
Wow. Wow.
So I have a, that's my husband say, well, and we'll all sell, you know, everybody in China, you know.
Yeah. A gluten-free major muffin.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So, but that's my dream.
That's great. That's good to have.
You have to have something to ponder late at night.
Yeah, exactly. I do that too. I lie awake and go, okay, how can this podcast become a network podcast with just people going out and getting all the stories?
Right. Right.
You know, and including all the voices that aren't always heard.
Right.
Like immigrants working in restaurants and people washing dishes and people serving and that kind of thing. Include every voice in our community, not just the chosen few.
Right, right. And I ultimately would like to be a source of job training, you know, for people who are on the first rung of the economic ladder. And so much like Greystone Bakery, of course, they have a huge foundation. They provide health care and living, and they're an amazing organization.
Yeah.
You have to have a dream.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I just read an article before coming over here today. Chef Ed Lee, he's in Louisville, Kentucky. He is starting a 40-week mentorship program for his new restaurant where he takes people off the street, no matter what their background, no matter, preferably with no training, and he mentors them for 40 weeks to be able to do restaurant work, because there is a line cook shortage in this country, and there's also a need for folks to get work.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know, I saw this in when our family had the good fortune to visit Vietnam, and they were training street children to wait tables and to work in restaurants. And,
right.
You know, and so there is, there's a need out there. And, of course, I'd like to be able to pay a living wage one day. And, you know, I have a lot of aspirations, but right now I'm just make 8 different varieties of gluten-free major muffins that are healthy and delicious.
And that's why the CIC class is so important. It's like, how do you align those lofty goals with the reality of running a successful business?
Right. I mean, I really see that, you know, every day as I try to take one little step forward on the, you know, operational side and still keep my goals in sight, you know. I enjoy it, but it's can be overwhelming if I try to think of all of it at once.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. That's what I have trouble with that. I'm curious as to how you approach the day to day. Like, I know we talked on the phone because we ended up having to reschedule the interview, and you said that Mondays were non-baking days for you. Like, do you have certain days of the week that you bake and other days that you handle other like money matters, like accounting, hiring, or training? Like, what's a typical week for you at Orange Dot?
Well, I'm trying to, Monday is my planning day. Mm-hmm. So I do planning in my books. And so I try to map out, you know, what it is that I'm trying to accomplish this week.
Right.
So for instance, right now I'd like to launch a frozen bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. And Rebecca's Natural Food Store is being very supportive.
Nice.
To sell that. And, you know, if you're in the gluten-free world, there's not a lot of convenience food. And I know this because my son is a freshman at Tulane, and I send him boxes of frozen bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches every week because he can pop them in the microwave at midnight on a Tuesday night when everybody else is ordering pizza, and he has something to eat.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, so Rebecca's is being really supportive of that, and, you know, it requires a lot of different steps. It requires, you know, first of all, a recipe, and I'm not quite satisfied yet with my frozen egg portion of that yet, but it requires a new label, involves having Virginia Tech look at it, and I have to get a waiver on my label because it's not the right format for the traditional, you know, label. And so there's a lot of different steps to that, you know, from the recipe to the packaging to the distribution. And I try to say on Mondays, like, which piece of this puzzle am I going to conquer this week and prioritize? Because if I don't, I'm totally lost. I mean, because there's so many different things that I could do that I would be, I try to identify the big rocks, because otherwise I'm just playing with the gravel and the sand all day long.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good analogy. I hate when I get stuck in days like that.
Yeah. And so I bake Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday right now, and then I deliver on Fridays. So it's a nice rhythm for me, and, you know, gives me time to think, time to enjoy my work, time to communicate with my customers.
Yeah, great, great. And you mentioned recipe development. I'm very curious about gluten-free muffins as being a bread lover.
Yes. Here, try. This is my most popular flavor, rustic rosemary.
Yeah, she brought a toaster. She brought like a bag of them to try. It's like we've got a whole spread of muffins here. I'm very curious. Maybe we can get some ambient noise here. Yeah. Be chewing.
We'll go for it. So the rustic rosemary has fresh rosemary and sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, quinoa, chia seeds, flax seeds.
That's really good.
It has 10 grams of protein per muffin, and it goes really nicely with a glass of red wine.
Oh, do you know what that, it tastes like, it's like a really good seeded bread.
Yes, that's what I'm going for.
Just a really good crunchy, like heavy grain seeded bread.
Yes.
And I used to love oat cakes, too, when I was in Scotland for a while. That's a long story, but I lived in Scotland for 6 months.
Ah.
And they make these things called oat cakes.
Huh.
But they're very dry. They're like a cracker.
Huh. Okay.
And they're good with cheese. They're good with cheddar.
Uh-huh.
They're good by themselves. Some people put peanut butter on them. This tastes like a better oat cake. And it's really good seeded bread. I would eat a lot of this.
Oh, I have a lot of customers who are not gluten-free who eat this because it has 10 grams of protein per muffin.
No kidding.
Yeah, so as a woman, we need 40 grams in a day. So a really healthy lunch is I toast one of these up, put a little spinach and balsamic glaze on it, and that's my lunch. You know, super healthy, getting, you know, balanced, and so it's getting lots of fiber. And
whoa.
Yeah, so it's you know, when I started making gluten-free bread, I know a lot of bread out there that has the texture of cardboard and has the nutritional value of cardboard or worse. And so I was trying to make something that would be really delicious and also healthy.
Yeah.
So I focus on high protein flours like oat flour and oat bran and quinoa and amaranth,
nice.
ancient grains. And I also, the other thing that's really important to me is not to create something that's also going to upset people's stomach for other reasons. And xanthan gum and guar gum are a mainstay in gluten-free baking. That's what people typically replace the gluten with is xanthan gum. And do you know what xanthan gum is?
I have no idea. I see it on a lot of labels of things.
It's the black mold on broccoli.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it's been bleached and dried. And I mean, I'm sure they have some other way of making it.
Don't they put that in ice cream too?
Yeah, this in ice creams and a lot of salad dressings.
It's broccoli mold?
It can come from a lot of different sources,
right.
But that's one of them.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I learned something today.
It gives people intestinal distress.
Yeah.
So it gives them a bellyache and they just don't know why. Because it's not, you know, even in small quantity, not everybody is sensitive to it, but about 50% of the population is.
So you could have celiac, and then you might have a xanthan gum sensitivity too.
Right, exactly. And so I don't use any xanthan gum or guar gum. Instead, I use ground chia seed and powdered psyllium husk.
Oh, that's healthy stuff.
Yeah. So chia seed is like a superfood.
Totally.
And you know, it gets gelatinous in water. Have you ever put chia seed? So it gives you a little bit of binding power there. And then the powdered psyllium husk adds fiber, you know, which a lot of the rice flours don't have a lot of fiber in them. So we're putting in protein and fiber. And taking out the xanthan gum and guar gum and putting in protein and fiber.
I'm really amazed at how good this tastes because I have such a bread thing and I was on a diet last spring because I had gained 20 pounds without realizing it.
Oh, easy to do.
And because of carbs, because I do eat a lot of carbs.
Right.
I could see me replacing this, you know, because I like to have bread with a little bit of butter to go with my dinner at night.
Right.
And this has got that nice, the seeds and the rosemary. Oh, my God, that's delicious.
Thanks. It makes a really great bun for a lamb burger.
Oh, my husband makes good lamb burgers. Yeah. Oh, my God, that would be good.
Yeah, it's a nice, really nice. And our best-selling sandwich at the farmer's market is the Figgy Piggy.
I saw that. Now, I go to the market, and I have to apologize. I'm probably one of those people that go gluten-free sandwich. No, I'm going to walk over here and get, you know, the lumpia Filipino food or the tacos.
Right.
But those sandwiches look really good. And now after trying this, I'm like, okay.
We I'm have convinced. We have a lot of customers who are not gluten-free.
Yeah.
And that the figgy piggy with the goat cheese and the prosciutto and little fig preserves and arugula. Beyond the rustic rosemary, it's a really delicious.
What's not to like about that? My God.
Yeah.
Really good. I can see you've cut them into triangles, and I make a lot of hummus in the summer.
Yes.
And I could see, like, using them as a pita bread almost.
Oh, yeah. Or I make little appetizers out of them, you know, with the goat cheese and, similar, all those things just as a topping, you know.
Yeah. Anything you would use a seeded cracker for.
Yeah.
Because those fancy seeded crackers that cost $8 a box.
Right. Like. right, exactly. Here, we'll try the everything.
That's my Bodo's go-to is the everything bagel.
Yeah, so it's garlic and salt and poppy seed and onion.
That's good. And that does not taste like cardboard.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
That has a really nice, you'd be like, oh, I better go back to the drawing board then. Well, this is really not like a nice seeded bread.
Yeah, it. I really am proud of my texture. I have a proprietary baking process which makes it really moist and chewy.
Talk about how you developed the recipe for Major Muffins, because I'm imagining there was a lot of trial and error.
It's a lot of trial and error involved, and I'm in like round 30 maybe of the recipes, of each of the recipes. But I started out trying to make a bagel, and the dough just falls apart in water.
Oh. And
so I have a trade secret. I can't describe too much of how I developed this. But Cellular Manufacturing Incorporated here in town is a machine shop, helped me design custom made pans to bake my bread. And so they always joke that they deal with the aerospace industry, the military, and me.
Wow.
So I have there's a real process behind them. Those big air pockets in my bread and the chewiness of it, that's all by design. And it's baked in a 4-inch cake pan, which is why it has the shape of a muffin, a English muffin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very painstaking process. There's a lot of steps involved.
Sure.
As is true with all gluten-free baking. But it's really my proprietary baking process that makes it moist and chewy and
nice
and really distinctive.
Did your son help you develop the recipe? Was he a taste tester?
He's still a taste tester. He's the other thing I would like to do is develop a college market strategy where I want to expand my product line beyond frozen bacon, egg, and cheese to maybe some other frozen sandwiches, you know, ham and cheese or turkey and Swiss or some others. And also my bread makes really great French toast. So like a frozen French toast. Personal pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
Try this one is Tuscan sun-dried tomato and basil.
Oh, yum.
And it's really great with a little bit of mozzarella.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a kick, a little bit of crushed red pepper.
Yeah.
And I think that would make a really nice frozen pizza for college
kids.
Oh,
it would. It really would.
You know, and I also make a really awesome blonde brownie, which is not part of the bread world. But so I'm thinking that I could make care packages. I have a monthly subscription for parents who are concerned about their celiac kids in college, you know, not having access to high-quality, nutritious food that's also convenient.
That's another revenue stream that I'm seeing a lot more of in town. I know Splendora's Gelato just started the Pint Club.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you pay a price and you get an experimental pint of gelato every month, I'm picking up mine this week.
Oh, interesting.
And last month's was amazing. It was a fennel gelato with blood orange candied slices in it.
Ooh, interesting.
Oh my God, it was so good.
But fennel gelato. It was so good.
Wow.
BK's kind of incredible that way. But it's a club. It's a, you pay a upfront fee, and then every month you get a care package of gelato. And Arlie Cakes is doing the same thing. She's got her cookie club.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that would really work.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because the packaging would be expensive, because I'd have to have a little styrofoam box and either dry ice or an ice brick, you know, just like if you ordered Jimmy Dean's or something through the mail, right. You know, you would get the packaging expensive. But what I've seen on my online business, because I sell online through my website, is that because there is such limited amount of bread in the gluten-free world that's actually delicious and healthy, mm-hmm. people are really willing to pay for the shipping and the packaging. And I'm not making a profit on that. I'm just passing along my expenses.
Yeah.
I'm astounded. You know, people will pay, $25 or $30 in shipping for 10 sleeves of bread.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so so there's a market out there. And I know just with my son, I worry about him all the time. You know, he wouldn't want to hear me say that. But, but once a mom, always a mom.
Of course, of course.
You know, so yeah. Yeah, and in terms of recipe development, the next thing I'd like to do is develop a lactose-free version of my bread.
Oh, so take it even further.
Right.
So there's no lactose in it at all.
Right, because right now I use Organic Valley's organic non-fat dry milk in my bread. And it plays an important role in terms of the milk sugars help with the browning, and the non-fat dry milk contains lecithin, which acts as an emulsifier, mm-hmm. which binds together the bread.
Mm-hmm.
And so it plays an important function, and I'm working on how to, pull that out so that I can, offer, a lactose-free version, because that's another issue that a lot of people have.
And yeah.
I feel like I'm halfway there. At the moment, I'll take special orders for lactose-free, mm-hmm. and I'm not selling it through Rebecca's yet or through Hunt Country Market or my other outlets.
So you've come up with one.
I do have one. I think it's like 75% of the way there, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are like, it's just fine for me.
And, right, good enough.
Right.
Yeah.
And they place some special orders. So.
Well, I admire you for going through all the trial and error, trying out the different flours and the different preparations and seeking out different, pans and working with these companies. Because I don't know a lot about gluten-free baking, but it seems like for the market, it's just enough to get something out there, not something that actually tastes good.
Well, and in that respect, I sort of stand on the shoulders of all the gluten-free bakers who came before me.
Yeah.
When I started this venture a little over 2 years ago, I'd always done gluten-free baking for my son, but then I did like an internet search of, who's doing what? What's the cutting edge? What's working for people? And I bought every gluten-free cookbook for baking that's out there, and I learned a tremendous amount in the process. I sort of developed my own ideas about how do I, xanthan gum is, a problem. How do I substitute for that? And I learned a tremendous amount about flours. For instance, sorghum flour is very popular in gluten-free bread. And
really?
Yeah, because it's a higher protein.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of mimics the gluten. Mimics wheat flour. But the problem with sorghum, I would make these beautiful, like, cinnamon rolls, and my son would be like, yes, and we would eat one, and we'd go, no.
Oh, no. Look good, but maybe not taste so good.
Well, they tasted delicious,
yeah.
But it gave us an incredible stomachache.
Oh.
And it's what's interesting about sorghum flour is, the U.S. is the number one producer of sorghum in the world.
Yes, it is.
But it's primarily fed to animals. And sorghum is an unusual protein in that the unusual flour in that the proteins cross-link when you cook them, as opposed to breaking down. So they actually get more rigid and more difficult to digest as you cook it. And so that's you know, that's what we were experiencing with the sorghum and the bread.
That's so interesting. I know I'm the Appalachian cuisine and bringing that region back to be vibrant again is kind of close to my heart. So I know a lot about sorghum syrup, but I did read what you wrote about sorghum flour on your website, and I was like, wow, I did not know that. I didn't know they fed it to, it was animal feed, and there was a flour. I only know about syrup production.
Right. Well, I mean, of course, we many things that animals eat. I mean, that in of itself wouldn't be a take it out of our food, you know, out of our cabinet. But the fact that it's so difficult to digest, is a really, for me anyway, that took it off the list of ingredients. And the other one is millet. Millet for some people is a goitrogen. You know, it causes thyroid issues.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and so. Not for everybody, but so that was another, because there's a lot of bread out there, I won't go naming names, that use a lot of sorghum and millet. Hmm. And I'm like, I'm sure the people who eat it know what they can tolerate, but
sure,
it wouldn't
sure.
work for me.
Sure.
Yeah, it wouldn't work for me.
And for those not familiar with celiac disease, what is it? And what causes it? And what are the effects? And why? It seems to me like it's a lot more present in our society than when I was growing up. I don't remember anybody having celiac problems.
Right. Well, there's, celiac is really...
Or celiac.
Yeah, it was about 3% of the population. So that in of itself is a small percentage, but it is it's an autoimmune disease. And so, your body rejects it. It causes inflammation of the intestines so that it swells up. And, your nutrition is absorbed by the little cilia, the little hair in your intestine.
Yeah,
It absorbs the nutrition. And when the intestine swells, those cilia can't access the food.
Okay.
It swells over them or on top of them or through them.
So the gluten cannot be digested.
It can't be digested. Well, it inflames the intestines such that if you're celiac, you may not, and if you're an undiagnosed celiac, you may not be absorbing iron or protein or, your body's not absorbing nutrients. They're just passing straight through your body.
Right.
So celiac is an autoimmune disease, but there's also wheat allergies, and there's also there's other pathways that people that doctors don't really fully understand yet. So, for instance, I'm not celiac, but when I eat gluten, my thyroid blows up.
Hmm.
So I get a huge goiter. I know people who lose their hair when they eat gluten.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it's also undiagnosed. Celiac is related to autism, depression, schizophrenia. There's other pathways that are not fully understood. It's more than just intestinal distress,
right?
And lack of processing nutrients. So,
do you think it's because of GMOs taken our wheat and just, made it into a Frankenstein's monster of, what it used to be, back in biblical times? Wheat has been around thousands of years, but it's not the same wheat
that
they ate back in the day.
Right. I've heard that. I don't know for sure. I also have had people talk a lot about, our hyper clean environment we live in.
Ah.
And there's a very high correlation between C-section children that are born through C-section and celiac.
Oh.
Interestingly enough, my son was born through C-section.
Interesting.
So the microbiome that coats the child's body when they're born through a C-section is very different than if it's a traditional vaginal birth. And that microbiome may be part of what is affecting the autoimmune.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different,
there's a lot of theories.
A lot of theories into it, we just have, we use hand sanitizer, we clean our house with all these extremely strong cleaners, and that in fact, when we were growing up with a little bit more dirt, you know, a little bit more natural dirt, you know, that we just sort of consumed and ingested. Those rheumatoid arthritis, you know, a lot of these inflammatory issues were not as acute when our body had something to attack.
Gotcha.
Without something to attack, it's attacking us.
Gotcha.
And that's another theory. But who knows? But it is definitely...
It's definitely around. I have a good friend who has celiac, and I think he's lactose intolerant as well. So might have to send him some of these.
Yeah, right. I'll send you the lactose-free version.
Yeah, there you go. You mentioned amaranth. What is that?
It's a seed.
It's a seed. It's one of those ancient seeds.
It's one of those ancient
seeds.
That we're kind of rediscovering. Right. And like quinoa, amaranth.
Quinoa, farro.
Uh-huh, right.
I'm a big farro fan.
I haven't done anything with farro, so I'm not familiar with
it. Yeah, I don't know how. God, it cooks up kind of. It can get mushy if you overcook it, so I'm not sure. It might be a good binding agent for bread.
I'm not sure if that one's gluten-free or not.
It may not be.
It might be a derivative, a wheat derivative.
Oh, that's right, because there are grains that have gluten and grains that don't. I would not have known right off the top of my head.
Right, there's a lot of, I feel like I've experimented with everything under the sun. I have this, like, science lab and closet, you know, with a banana flour and, you know.
What? There's banana flour?
There is such a thing as banana flour. It does make a really nice banana muffin, but not such a great plain bread.
I was going to say, that would be good banana bread.
Yeah. I have a whole buckwheat, which is also gluten-free, you know, but it has a very more distinctive flavor. So if it's out there and it's gluten-free, I've tried it at some point in the past 2 years. But it's fun.
No kidding. Experimenting.
Yeah. For like the first year I was doing this, my kids were like, "What is mom doing?"
Oh my God.
She used to be so purposeful. Now she spends all of her time tinkering in the kitchen.
Exactly. Come on. Here, try this. Taste this.
Right.
Mom, I just tried some yesterday.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Here, just eat it. What do you think?
Right. Well, you know, I make some other flavors, too. Are you up for, toast up some? I make a couple sweet flavors as well. So the non-sweet flavors I make are russet rosemary and superseded, which are basically the same flavor, one without rosemary and one with. And then I make an everything, which is the garlic and that we discussed. I make a sun-dried tomato and basil called Tasty Tuscan. I also make a Santa Fe savory, which has roasted corn and jalapeno, a little bit of garlic. Makes an awesome cheddar cheese and avocado turkey sandwich.
I bet that would be good.
It's really
good
delicious.
Flavors together.
Yeah. And I make a couple of sweet ones. I make a cinnamon raisin and also a chocolate chip, which is what I call my version of a croissant because the dough is not sweet and it has really high quality Calabo chocolate chips.
Oh, yum.
You know, so
that'd be good French toast.
Yeah, it is a really good French
toast.
Yeah. So I'll just toast up some more.
Sure.
Yeah,
go for it. I wonder, do you have, do readers ever suggest flavors or readers or like tasters? They say, oh, you should do a...
Oh, yes. Like a dill, like a potato dill and a sourdough.
Sourdough
would be nice. Blueberry is what I get requests for now and then.
Now I'm trying to think. You would have to do a sourdough starter. That's gluten-free. Is that possible?
Well, I mean, everything...
As a baker, I'm sitting here thinking, like, you would have to get the yeast to eat the grain, like...
It has to ferment.
It's got to ferment. Your SCOBY... Or is that for SCOBY? Is for for kombucha? I don't know if they call it a SCOBY if it's for sourdough. It's the little starter thing that you keep in your Tupperware.
Right. I think it could be done. I haven't tried it yet, but I think it could be done. I've gotten advice not to expand my flavor lines too much more. You know that
Right.
I need to decide what I want to be when I grow up before I...
Right. before you get to that world domination stage.
Right,
where there's
right.
an orange dot baking in every major city.
Right, right. I mean, so, you know, one vision is to go for the... you know, the Whole Foods supermarket route. One vision is to do a little restaurant like Bodo's, but for gluten-free. And then another version is to do the online, you know, online distribution, the subscription model. But what I've been told is if I go the grocery store route, they won't want even, they'll only want four flavors. They won't even want eight, you know, so.
Right, right.
You know, so I should... you know, focus my efforts.
Gotcha.
Yes, I'm sort of a one-man show, one man with a couple of part-time employees giving me a hand, so.
Gotcha, gotcha. And you are in quite a couple of restaurants in town.
I am. I'm in Firefly was the first one. They picked me up when I was at the farmer's market 2 years ago when I was still just taste testing through. I should give a shout-out to the bagel ladies and Janet Dobb.
Oh, I love Janet.
She's great.
Yeah, she's really great.
She's wonderful. Yeah, when I first got started, I rented her kitchen in Stanton, and, of course, I had to sanitize it every time I walked in there to do gluten-free because
right.
she does bagels.
Because she does gluten
yeah.
bagels.
Right, she does gluten bagels, and I would have to taste it. I mean, I would have to test it with a gluten test before I could offer it to the public. And
oh, there is such a thing?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like a little pH paper or something?
Yeah, yeah, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so, but...
Oh, that's understandable. I have an old friend who his nut allergy is so severe, he can't even if we're in New York and they're roasting nuts, he has to cross the street because if he even gets the whiff of the scent of it up his nose, he'll have a reaction.
Oh,
yeah, that's how sensitive he is. That's kind of nuts.
Yeah,
kind of nuts.
Kind of crazy. Kind of nutty. Here, try the chocolate chip.
Oh, definitely. I'm gonna turn that. Oh, nice and warm. Oh my God. See, now I would toast one of these up in the afternoon for a snack. Like because I always want something sweet about this time of day. With
right.
my second or third cup of coffee.
Right, right, exactly.
And this is chock full of chips. Oh, it does taste. It's like a chocolate muffin, but toasty on the outside.
Right, right.
Way better.
Yeah, and the
muffins are too sweet to me.
Yeah, the dough doesn't have any added sugar to it.
No, it doesn't need it.
It's just a plain dough, and then the Calabo.
That's really good.
Chocolate chips, I just love.
What kind of chocolate?
Calabo, C A L L E B A U T. It's a French chocolate chip. It's a lovely. Lovely.
I will have to seek those out because that is very scrumptious.
Yeah, and then try the cinnamon raisin.
And I don't feel an ounce of guilt because there's no carb.
Well, I don't know. There's no carbs.
Or low carbs.
I think it has carbs, but it's just
gluten-free
more
carbs.
Gluten-free carbs and more protein in it. So that muffin has 8 grams of protein per muffin.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, so again, it's not a sugar bomb.
No.
It's just, it's got a lot of cinnamon.
Yeah.
You know, the sweetness comes from the raisins.
It tastes like really good cinnamon raisin bread.
Thank you. Yeah.
The texture on that is so good.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really...
If you had not told me that this was gluten-free, I would have just guessed, oh, this is just a really good, like... nice wheat bread or a seeded bread because it doesn't have that gluten-free texture.
That's the nicest compliment you could pay me.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
So good. When you started Orange Dot, this is kind of a long question. When I went to the Business of Food Conference last summer, one of the topics they discussed was packaging.
Oh,
And there was a very long, deep discussion about proper packaging for your product. And it was something that I had never thought about. And Martin Herbert gave the talk, and he was saying that, You know, if your jar is too tall, if it's too wide, if it's not the right size, they won't put it in the good place on the shelf in the grocery store.
Right.
So I've asked this as a question ever since. When you started your company, how did you decide what packaging was best? And was that a long process?
I have to say that whenever I can, I try to learn from those around me. And Janet Dobb put her bagels in a sleeve like this. Yeah.
And you're like, well, that works for me.
Like, well, she's been very successful, and I'm going to just ride her coattails.
There you go.
There is a lot of science that goes into, you know, what's the right plastic sleeve. You know, it's crazy because you think that once something is frozen, it's just frozen, right?
Sure.
It's inert.
Yeah.
Not true. The water continues to migrate, even though it's frozen. And so there's getting the air out and having the right plastic so that there's reduces the water migration.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of science behind what's exactly the right package. And I don't know if I have exactly the right package, but I have the one that Janet uses.
Yeah.
But I think as I get more further along in my journey, that I think my packaging will improve, because you could do so many things like for the college market, to something special that would help it in the microwave to brown better. There might be something more
for that fast casual kind of approach where they can just, you know, stick it in the microwave right quick late at night.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I still have, I have so much to learn, you know, but
when I'm thinking freezing it, if that does that affect the molecules in the bread at all, like as it thaws, like the chemistry behind that too.
Right, right. Well, that's a good point. And so what I find is that my bread is really good for about 2 months mm-hmm. in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, the water starts to move around. And it's still very flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to throw it out. But like any bread, it starts to look like it's got freezer burn, or it's just not quite the same quality that it was originally. But the good news is with my bread is that taking it out of the freezer and popping it in the microwave for 30 seconds does nothing to it. I mean, then you can put it in the toaster beyond that. You know, so it's very convenient. You can leave it on the counter. It's good for about 5 days. I've had Virginia Tech do the testing. You know, when does it start to mold and all those kind of things. And so I've got.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, they're a great resource. Joel Eifert at Virginia Tech is really a great resource.
Talk about that a little bit. How did they help you with your business, and what exactly do they do over there?
They've helped me with several things. They talked to me about this whole packaging issue.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Eifert. It's called the Food Innovation Program. And, you know, for a few bucks, they'll do your nutrition label, and they'll talk to you about your pH and values and all of that. But Virginia Tech is a land-grant institution, which means that they part of their mission is to work with the community to promote businesses. There's a very nice gentleman from Virginia Tech, Bob Lane, who comes to see me about once a quarter to check on my business and help me with my process. And it's interesting. So gluten-free dough is thick and sticky and viscous. I bake mine in a 4-inch cake pan, and, you know, I bake 84 pans at a time. And so I started out hand scooping this dough, and it has to be a very precise amount. And you can imagine hand scooping, I was getting carpal tunnel syndrome, inside of about 6 months. And so Bob came and visited me. He said, what you need is a depositor that, you know, I make the dough and I dump it into this big vat, and I hook the depositor to an air compressor, and it shoots the dough out into the pans. Goes ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
Oh!
And it shoots the dough out into this.
That's terrific.
Yeah, it was incredible. It sped up my process. You know, quadrupled my production almost immediately, and it was a very expensive piece of equipment, but it's been very well worth it. And there were lots of depositors on the market, and he narrowed it down to the one I needed. And worked with me to get it installed, and then worked with me to get the right air compressor and how to maintain an air compressor and drain an air compressor. And, you know, And
that's
so,
amazing.
Yeah, so he's been really, really helpful. If I have a question, I need a hood now, because my process generates a lot of steam, and so
sure.
So he's working with me to figure out what's the right hood and what the, you know, how to get that installed. And so,
along with CIC, another resource.
Huge.
If you want to start a food business, he'd be somebody you'd want to talk to.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, you know, what's really been amazing to me is how the other food entrepreneurs in Charlottesville have been so supportive.
Yeah. I hear that a lot.
It's great.
I love it when I hear it.
Yeah. I mean, everything from Janet, you know, really inspiring me in the kitchen from the very beginning, saying every problem can be solved. Don't tell me a problem can't be solved.
Yeah.
You know, she really, you know, encouraged me to, you know, if I had a problem with any baking or my process, to just keep plugging and to keep chipping away at it. And we had some hilarious moments in those early stages. And then Hope Lawrence from Hudson Henry Granola.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So inspiring.
That's so funny.
Yeah, you know, reviewed my labels and my graphics, and, you know, it was really encouraging. And,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot. And then Jim Boyle and Kim Denning. I wouldn't have a kitchen if they hadn't found all my used equipment on the internet for me. And, you know, they're longtime bakers with Breadworks. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and they were super helpful in helping me get my kitchen going. So the food entrepreneurs and the food community here is incredibly
Oh, they're amazing.
Helpful. Yeah.
I was at, I moderated the TomTom panel last spring. It was a food business network. And I met Hope and Janet at that conference because they were both speakers. And Janet told this amazing story about trying to buy a trailer, like a canned ham trailer to
yes.
sell bagels.
Yes.
And it was hilarious. But what I loved about that whole afternoon was 40 business owners, food business owners in one room.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I have problems with distribution.
Uh-huh.
Can mm-hmm. you help me with that? Oh, this is what I did.
Right.
Well, how about your packaging? Where did you get, you know, your plastic bags, or where did you get your boxes?
Yes.
Oh, call Bob, you know, call. And it was a chance for all these busy guys and gals, like, to sit in one room and just network.
Yes, I was there.
Oh, you were there?
Yes.
So you
yes.
know.
Yeah, it was great.
Like, why don't we do this once a month?
Yeah.
Like, or once every quarter?
Once a quarter would be great.
We need some kind of, like...
Yeah.
It's funny, Cass Cannon and I talked about maybe doing a Facebook group as
that'd
a start.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, I need a new hood. Who should I call? Or my fridge is on the fritz. Who should I call? Like, just stupid little
yes.
questions like that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's a million of those things. You know, my oven is starting to smoke now.
Yeah.
Oh,
what's the problem?
Do I call the repairman? No, you just need to clean your oven. I'm like, oh, okay.
Right. I keep thinking the more I talk about it, maybe somebody will step forward and, because, Lord, I don't know if I have time to do it.
Oh, I think you should do it.
I can start
go
a Facebook group at least.
Yeah, go for it.
But, yeah. Well, and that kind of leads into my next question, because you started another company or helped start another company, the Kitchen Network.
The Kitchen Network. Yes, Ian Pascarelli and Allie Hill and I.
What an amazing idea. Talk about that.
Oh, were you at the TomTom? Did you hear us pitch last year at the TomTom Festival?
I did not.
Oh,
but in doing research for the talk today, excuse me, I found the website.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
And just went, "What took everybody so long? This is an amazing idea."
Yes, yes. It was a great Ian Pascarelli, Allie Hill and I did research for over a year on this. We actually pitched at the TomTom Festival at the Entrepreneurs Night last spring, and we thought we were going to get it, and we didn't. But
you should have.
Well, we loved. We had a great time. It was worth the exposure. We actually had an article in Forbes written about us after that, and about the Kitchen Network. And Ian is now. Allie and I both have our own food businesses. Allie runs the Food Works, so we both have our own food businesses, and we're just spread too thin to be a major player in a third business,
or
in a second business for us. And so we are now advisors for Ian, and he's approaching the Angel Network to get funds to launch it in a big way.
Oh, so. That's a good thing. And what exactly, for folks that don't know what Kitchen Network is?
So this is something that came out of my work at the CIC and my trying to launch my own food business, is that because this is a second career for me, I have a few more resources than somebody who's just starting out.
Sure.
As a young person or who has a growing family. My kids are all in college or grown.
Sure.
It became very clear to me that the biggest hurdle that food entrepreneurs face is where do they cook? Where do they bake?
Absolutely.
And I was very lucky when I went through CIC. Martha from Trinity Church also went through CIC, and they were building a kitchen to rent. And so that was the first kitchen I rented after I became incorporated. I just became aware that, when you have immigrants who come to this country, everybody can cook. Everybody has a home cuisine. But if you don't have access to a commercial kitchen, you can't get that product to the market.
Right.
You can't even take that first test marketing step, to get it to the market. Ian worked at the time at the Virginia Cooperative Extension Office, and so he worked with food entrepreneurs, training them in the sanitation and serve safe, and so he knew the issue as well. So what we've done is it's the Airbnb for kitchens. There are
Amazing.
Kitchens all over this community that sit unused 70% of the time. And so we came up with the concept to rent them out like Airbnb by the hour to food entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a really great business.
It's an amazing resource. It's such a great idea.
Yeah.
Because to get a kitchen certified commercial, you have sanitation requirements, and you have all kinds of regulations and forms and money and
scale. You just need a certain scale.
Sure.
To be able to.
Or even space. I know Rachel Pennington at the Pie Chest, she makes the pies off-site in a commercial kitchen because the space at the Pie Chest is simply not big enough.
Right, right.
So that's another consideration, is you just don't have the room.
Right, right, exactly. Exactly. So this is, it's a dual benefit to the organizations. A lot of churches, have really nice big commercial kitchens.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Like Trinity Church. So it's a revenue source for the churches, and it helps the community members, the food entrepreneurs, get over that initial hump of getting into business.
So they can raise money instead of having the kitchen just sit there empty, not being used.
Right, right.
And it's on an as-needed basis, so it's not like a monthly rent situation.
Right,
it's
right.
just as you need it.
Right. I mean, when I rented from Trinity Church, it was a great. I was still in the test marketing mode, and
right.
And so for me not to have to commit to purchasing my own ovens and my own equipment, to be able to use theirs, it's a huge was a huge help to me. And it's just such a mutually beneficial program.
Yeah. It's a win-win for all sides.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's great. It's called the Kitchen Network and rentalkitchennetwork.com.
Yeah.
And Ian Pasquarelli is going to knock the cover off the ball.
I think so. Yeah. I think so, especially with food being so popular now. I mean, small businesses and food trending every month.
Right. Right.
With no end in sight, it doesn't seem to be letting up at all.
Right. And Allie and I are still, small owners and advisors, to his business. So it's great.
That whole community thing again.
Right.
Like having that mission in your mind as you go forward. I'm making gluten-free muffins, but I also want to, incorporate the support that I've gotten and give back in some way.
I haven't met anybody who doesn't have that.
Yeah.
As part of their thinking that.
Yeah.
It's just a very supportive, let's all succeed. It's nothing You know, my first career was on Wall Street, and it was felt very much like a zero-sum game.
Sure.
And this is the antithesis of that.
Yeah.
It's very collaborative.
Collaborative and helping mm-hmm. each other.
Right.
It's funny. It took me a little while to realize that that's what I was doing with the podcast, because I was talking to people, and one day I was like, oh, this is a community, and it's a community effort.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and we all learn. I learn from your podcast. You know.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's great.
I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope so. I've learned a great deal. I am looking at gluten-free a lot differently now. I would poo-poo, I have to admit.
Oh, I know.
But I'm a slave to my taste buds.
Yes.
As so many of us are.
Right. Well, I will say I'm grateful to the restaurant owners who now appreciate a diversity of digestive systems. And
I like that. A diverse digestive community.
And they just put some items on the menu that are gluten-free. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be everyone, but that there's two or three, you know, it really opens up the restaurants. I mean, it used to be we could go to, you know, you did pretty well at a Mexican restaurant and maybe, you know, maybe an Asian restaurant, you know, depending on the soy sauce, you know, used. But now it's just wonderful that the communities become.
Things have opened up a lot.
Yeah.
I know they did open a vegetarian vegan place in York Place.
Oh.
That might be the first one in town that's strictly vegetarian vegan.
Interesting. Yeah.
But I
wonder if they're gluten free as well.
I wonder. It's Asian dishes, because it's the owner. She owns or did own Monsoon.
Oh, okay.
And she took a few years off, and she's decided to come back and do all vegetarian.
Oh, interesting.
So, but I've been curious, especially in a welcoming town like Charlottesville, why there isn't a gluten-free restaurant or a vegetarian restaurant or a vegan restaurant yet.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. If you look at my packaging, it doesn't scream gluten-free. I mean, mm-hmm. it says gluten-free, but it doesn't scream because I believe my bread is good enough to be eaten by anyone.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm really, I believe that part of the growth potential of my product is that it has crossover appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the really savvy purveyors of gluten-free products are starting to realize that it really needs to be good enough for the whole market.
Sure.
And so if I were to launch a gluten-free restaurant, you know, or sandwich stand or something, you know, whatever, I would really just market it as a great place to eat.
Right. And, rather than have it.
Right. But the gluten-free world, it would pass like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
Like this one is the gluten-free one. Like everybody mm-hmm. knows Burton's Grill is gluten-free. They have a whole gluten-free side of their kitchen, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, but if you're gluten-free, you knew that. You would know.
Oh,
We talk.
Yeah, you share. Oh, I just had this great thing. And
yeah. And yeah, Burton's Grill is doing this. Or, oh, did you see the new, you know, Orange Dot down at the farmer's market?
Yeah.
They do great gluten-free sandwiches.
That makes sense. And I bet you do a lot of free tastings.
Oh, if I can get someone to taste my bread, I can get them to buy it.
Totally.
That's my, I really encourage, and I encourage people to taste all eight flavors. Like, mm-hmm. you know, don't just feel guilty about sampling one or two. Like, really.
Yeah.
And even if they're not gluten-free, I'll say, well, just go, you know, you probably know somebody who's gluten-free.
Yeah.
If you share with them about, you know, your experience, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and everybody's going to have their own favorite, depending on what they like.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
Huh.
Let's see. Oh, why are they called major muffins?
Ah, well,
I should have asked that first.
No,
here we are towards the end.
Well, major muffins is major flavor, major protein, major
nice.
Fiber, major. It's just
I like it.
And so yeah, it's like a
they're major.
They're major. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love that.
My attempt to give it some, you know, to say that these are weighty, these are hefty, these are mighty, these are some major. Major muffins.
Totally. I agree. I like that. That works. I've got my marketing brain on. I could see that working a lot of different ways for marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of different segments of people.
Right.
Like the college kids and the
And soon to come, major sandwiches and major croutons and major breadcrumbs and major
croutons.
Yeah.
See, now that, I like the way you think.
Yeah, so there's a lot of...
It's bread. What else?
Yeah. There's a lot of opportunity out there.
Every successful food business person I talk to is always the next revenue stream. Where is it going to come from? Like, weddings, I have to ask.
Oh,
weddings?
I haven't done a wedding. That would be an interesting... I have thought about burger restaurants, like Citizen Burger.
Citizen?
Yeah, Citizen would be... is sort of on my radar screen. I haven't actually approached them yet, but...
You know, all right... I used to be a restaurant critic. I'll put that hat on for about 30 seconds. I love Citizen Burgers, but I find the bun too mushy.
Mm.
If this was in Citizen Burger, I would order it as my bun. I totally would. I would get the really seeded one, the rosemary one, or the garlic, the everything.
Mm.
Because I love a good brioche, but when you've got a big, fat, juicy burger, the brioche doesn't hold up, even if it's toasted. It just falls to mush.
Oh, interesting.
So it doesn't hold all the ingredients very well.
Mm. Well, it's just it's not offering any flavor complementary, or it's not enhancing the burger at all.
Either. No, because it's just bread.
Right.
It's just bread. Simple. It's good bread.
Right. Right.
But I end up taking the burger apart because it falls apart.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the gluten-free bun option they have there is...
Oh, the face you just made. Oh, my Lord.
Less
what
than
a face.
Optimal.
Yeah, less
say.
Than optimal. Oh, I think they need to talk to you. Yeah. And hope someone's listening from over there. They need to be on the podcast.
Right.
I love their burger.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy when you're not running a food empire?
Oh, jeez. I do a lot of work at two of my kids graduated from Tandem Friends School, and I'm on the board there. And I think now more than ever, we need a values-based education and a Quaker environment. You know, and so... I spend a lot of time. I'm chair of the finance committee there. I just spend a lot of time working on that. And
that's fantastic. And so, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Spend a lot of time doing some yoga, and we've got three kids, and love to travel. But my heart and soul are in this business.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. I wake up every morning. You know, at 6 o'clock, and my husband's like, "What are you working on now?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, I just, you know, I want the lactose free. I need a source of lecithin. You know, if it doesn't have the lactose, I need a source of lecithin. I don't want to put soy in it. So I think there's sunflower lecithin. So I've been researching different sources of lecithin that might not be soy based, that would be an emulsifier. And so there's always some little, you know, thing that in the back of my mind I'm trying to, figure out. And
that's wonderful. I think if you don't have your own business, people may not understand that, because I get that from my husband and from friends. They're like, why do you never stop working? But to me, the brainstorming part of it is the most fun part.
Yes.
What else can I do? How else can I get my product out to folks?
Right.
How can I take this further than what I have right now? And that creative part is my favorite.
Yeah, I love that.
So it doesn't feel like work.
No, it doesn't feel like work at all. And I love the farmer's market. Oh my gosh. I didn't realize as an adult you get very little positive feedback until I started getting oodles of positive feedback at the farmer's market. I'm like, wow, this feels good. I like this.
Right? It works so well.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually an okay person. Did something good today.
I made this person happy, and they told me they made me happy, and it makes me feel happy to me. You know, really, food is, food is my language of love.
Yeah.
You know, I started cooking dinner for my family when I was 12 years old, and both my parents worked, and I was the youngest of four, and that was my job in the house. And so I've been cooking virtually my entire life. And
oh, that's so nice. Did you grow up around here?
I actually grew up in rural Alabama.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What brought you to Virginia?
It was a long path. I went to college at Wesleyan University in Connecticut, and then worked on Wall Street.
Yeah.
And then got married and had kids, stayed home for a long time, and we just chose Charlottesville. We just decided we wanted to live here. And my husband's business was portable at the time. He was flying to New York, so he could fly from anywhere. And
Oh, nice. So that's a nice benefit.
Yeah, that was a nice benefit. And now he works locally, thankfully, and we love Charlottesville. And but if I love you, I really want to feed you. That's my, you know.
Yeah.
What can I do?
I've got a friend from Alabama. Where are you from? I'll have to, I don't remember what town he's from, though. I'll have to ask.
I'm from Opelika.
Opelika, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask Brian.
Which is about an hour from Montgomery or 2 hours from Atlanta. And it's a great community. I love my hometown, my hometown friends, and
I haven't met many folks from Alabama. I just know just my friend Brian, so I have to see.
There's a pack of us here.
I meet a lot of folks from PA, like Pennsylvania.
Oh,
here.
Interesting.
Yeah,
they gravitate toward you. They like.
They have come to Charlottesville.
Yeah.
So there does seem to be a lot of folks from other places.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great town to relocate to.
Yeah. Well, I have loved talking with you.
Thank you.
So you get 5 stars for that.
Oh, thank you.
But how about a couple of like quick speed round questions to end?
Geez. Okay. All right.
Now this might be a tricky one, but maybe not. Do you have a secret junk food vice?
Mm.
Like if you've had a rough day,
Is
there something you gravitate towards?
Well, I have a real weakness for ice cream. So Chunky Monkey Ben & Jerry's.
What, xanthan gum-free ice cream?
Yes, xanthan gum-free ice cream. If I'm on a long trip, I want a big package of Runts, which are those,
citrus
candies.
Oh, my nephew loves those.
Yeah, they can give you a real bellyache over a long trip. But
they are good, though.
They are good, yeah. Bark Thins, those dark chocolate with pumpkin seeds.
Oh, I don't know those.
They're from Costco, and they're delicious. It's just a really nice dark chocolate with pumpkin seeds, and it looks like bark. And
oh, yum. So,
yeah, I can eat a whole bag in a sitting, and it's delicious.
But. Okay, that's how you know when it's your vice, is if you can literally sit and eat a whole bag without thinking about it.
Yes,
and you
exactly.
go, oh, maybe that wasn't a good idea.
Right.
Do you have a favorite food city? Like if I gave you a free ticket to fly anywhere in the world to eat, where would you go and what would you eat?
Delhi, New Delhi.
Really?
Indian.
Have you been?
I have.
I need to talk to you because I would love to go to India.
Yeah, spicy.
Yeah.
Curries. Yeah, delicious.
Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. I want to go. It's on my bucket list.
I'm sure you'll get there.
Yeah.
It's a great place to go.
And you mentioned Vietnam earlier. That's another country I'm really dying to go to.
Go quick because it's changing before your very eyes.
That's what I hear. Like all the old street vendors and stuff are kind of going away a little bit.
It's becoming more westernized.
Yeah.
But I'd have to Vietnamese food or Indian food, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I love that. More ethnic.
Hard choice.
Hard choices, really.
Let me ask one I haven't asked in a while. I end up asking the same ones. Let's see. If someone opened your fridge, what would they always find? Always in your fridge.
Oh.
Never without.
Ginger beer.
Ginger beer. Yum. I love ginger beer.
Cock and Bull ginger beer is super
really?
Spicy and really refreshing, and with or without vodka. It's really good.
Right?
Absolutely.
Right? Oh, that's a new answer, but I love ginger beer.
Yeah.
It's so good on a summer day,
yeah.
And it's so good on your fruit. I sometimes have a weak stomach, so I like ginger beer a lot.
Put habanero bitters, the Hellfire habanero bitters, and a squeeze of lime. Ooh, it's just...
Oh, yum.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Hellfire habanero bitters.
Yeah.
Is that local?
It's local. You can get it over here at the Spice Diva.
Oh, I'm going there tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah.
I will.
Really nice.
I will. Again, back to community.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, and the last question I always ask, and again, for community and to keep the theme going, who in our food region should I interview next? That I haven't talked to already.
Oh. Have you interviewed Janet Dobb?
I have not. I was hoping you'd say her.
I would really recommend Janet. She's one of my favorite people. She's a great person. She's a great soul. She's and her business is finally taken off, and she's well deserved. And she's had an interesting path and a long journey,
and she tells great stories.
And she tells great stories.
Yeah, you heard the story about the trailer. Yeah, we won't tell it here. I'll save it for the podcast, guys. It was hilarious.
It was hilarious.
I'm looking to buy one myself, so I always have that in the back of my head now.
It is. She's hilarious. She's great. And she can do anything.
I agree. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was delightful.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate your interview. I hope that somebody enjoys listening to it.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Another great talk, right? How about that? All you gluten-free detractors out there, maybe you just refuse to ever try it. You think it's going to taste like cardboard. I'm telling you, Major Muffins are some major flavor. I really, really like them. I actually just had a no bull burger on a Major Muffin for lunch yesterday. I put some cheddar cheese on top, added some mustard, and it was a whole hell of a heap of healthy. How about that for some alliteration? It was good stuff. All right, and check out Virginia Festival of the Book. I'll have the link in the show notes and the link for the Orange Dot Report and all the other good stuff that we talked about in today's episode. It all starts March 22nd through the 26th. And yes, I will be posting 5 podcasts in 5 days starting the 16th. I'm headed to D.C. tomorrow to talk with Todd Kleiman, the critic for The Washingtonian and the author of several books. And one of his pieces on tacos in Mexico City is in the Best American Food Writing 2016. And it's a great piece. Fantastic. I can't wait for you to hear it. Thanks so much for being here today, guys. Thanks to my sponsors, Teej.fm, my sponsors at patreon.com/audaciouspod. You can find me at iTunes. My website is audacious.co because the .com is still for sale. Send me your comments, submit a review. Do you have suggestions for future guests or topics, places I should visit? I would love to hear them. And until next time, I am Janae Libby of Audacious. I'm ferocious, very loquacious, especially today, dumping all over you guys about meeting my hero. Appreciate your patience with that. I'm gracious, bodacious, and when it comes to learning about food and keeping those connections going, I'm very audacious, and I hope you are too. Cheers. Have a good weekend, guys.